John DiNardo. And I don't think he's any stranger to any of you who have been following this show. He's been on this show quite a few times, and he's back with us tonight. So everybody, please welcome John DiNardo back to Late Night in the Midlands. Welcome aboard, John.
Hello, Michael. I'm happy to be with you and your audience.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back, and I also want to thank you for coming on at such short notice.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. Where would you like? Well, I guess first, let's start with a little background, because I unfortunately was pressed for time and lost track of my bio here. So if you want to give a little bit of background and then direct us where you'd like to go tonight.
Okay. Well, I started out in electronics in the Marine Corps, going to U.S. Navy technical schools. And then after my discharge from the Marine Corps, I attended college to earn a bachelor's degree in science education, graduated very near the top of my class, and specialized in physics and biology. And I really enjoyed those scientific subjects. Went on to teach high school physics for a while, but the repetition, you know, six classes of teaching physics per day made life quite monotonous, even though I enjoyed the subject. So, and I just therefore decided to go into something more challenging, more creative and rewarding, which was returning to the field of electronics, where I had originally began in the Marine Corps. Then I moved on to numerous companies working as a technician and moving up to engineering activities, going on to attain higher, more additional courses in electronics engineering, and then eventually I went on to become a design engineer with Bell Telephone Laboratories. Bell Laboratories later to become AT&T Bell Laboratories in New Jersey. Well, I retired after 20 years with Bell Laboratories, and after numerous years with other companies, went on to work for another company, Mobile Vision, which was electronics also, and then retired. And after, during my last years with Mobile Vision and during my early retirement years, I felt compelled spiritually to warn people about what I had been learning about this Planet X, this incoming dwarf star, which had been written about by a man named Mark Hazelwood in a book titled Blindsided. And he, like so many other people bringing us information about coming disasters, like so many others, they made predictions that were too soon or too early for their own time. He was predicting at the time, based upon information that he was getting, that it was, this event would occur, disastrous event would occur around the year 2003. Well, of course, it never happened. But we see the events, we see the disturbances of the Earth, the traumas of the Earth, increasing gradually over the last decade or more in terms of weather, horrendous weather of all sorts, windstorms, tornadoes, hurricanes, epic flooding, you know, epic drought and flooding in simultaneously in neighboring regions of the country, in neighboring areas of the world. You have simultaneous flooding and drought. You have excessive heat waves. And at the same time, we have tremendous cold waves too. So the Earth is going through a yo-yo type of experience with weather, and also geological disasters such as earthquakes have been increasing steadily over the years, as well as volcanic disturbances, tsunamis. So we see on Earth, everyone on Earth is quite concerned. I mean, even the people, take for example, the people here on the East Coast have experienced great shock and trouble as a result of Hurricane Sandy. Now, that was a hurricane that was unprecedented in history because of its tremendous area that it covered. Historically, we have seen hurricanes covering a limited area, but this one covered such a large area, it was just unusual. And Hurricane Irene, which was all, it was also devastating on the East Coast, that was equally unusual in that it covered a large area. So we're seeing these extraordinary weather disasters, and extreme and severe in nature, and as well as geological disasters that tell us that something is happening to our planet. It's unavoidable. When people begin to wonder, they can either ignore it and just consider it something that's going to be a passing phase in our history, or they can look deeper into the cause of it. And when they do, they'll find out that our government has known about the cause of it and is covering up that the cause of all these traumas on Earth.
If I could interrupt for a second, I can't argue with that, because if you look at all the evidence, and that includes everything the government has been doing as far as seed banks go, underground facilities, cities, farms, I mean, you name it, they're preparing for something. And recently, I have somebody made me aware of Google Sky and gave me some coordinates, and I actually put them in, and there's something there. There's a, looks like a, some kind of sun, a little sun, and it's got wings to it. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, that has was originally sighted, well, by outside of the government, that is, by people, by researchers and reporters, way back in the beginning of this year, around the beginning of this year, at Mount Turrialba, which is a high peak volcano in Costa Rica. They have an observatory, an astronomical observatory, and some photographs were taken, and then they promptly shut down this observatory. Well, others went up there. Marshall Masters was one of the researchers who went up there, or at least spoke to people who were there, and acquired photographs of this second sun that you're referring to. And he's got a wonderful video presentation on YouTube. If you go to YOWUSA.com, that's his website, I think you can look for, search for the video titled Two Suns or Second Sun, something like that. You could even find it, you know, not only on his website, but on YouTube. And the photographs, and he describes it, the whole succession of various proofs indicating that this is not a photographic illusion, or this is not some kind of a reflection, but it is an actual distinguishable celestial body.
And I've seen some interesting stuff on that Neumayer station as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, I haven't checked with the Neumayer.
Yeah, Neumayer
station in the South Pole that the government has constructed and kept quite secret. I mean, it's not top secret, because some people have leaked information out, but they try to keep it as secret as possible. And you never hear reference to it in the mass media.
Right. But Yeah, you can go to the site. I have the link. I'll send it to you if you like later. And you can go and you could actually see the 24-hour cam video. It goes into like a movie deal for you. And when the sun comes up, you'll see the moon. You'll see the sun go by. And then there's this other bodily object that comes up after the sun. And it's, you know, and some people have tried to say it's a camera flare, but it isn't. Something's there.
you're right. And again, and that evidence, in addition to Marshall Masters' evidence taken from the peak of Mount Turrialba in Costa Rica, absolutely proved to us that this is an object. And I believe Marshall Masters calls it what the ancient Hopi Indians call the blue kachina,
yeah,
which is the smaller comet that precedes the very large comet coming thereafter, following thereafter. And that second comet is called the Red Kachina. So that's what we have to look forward to. People are saying, people who are researching are saying that in September or later this year, early next year, Earth will be experiencing significant problems. I don't know what they're going to be, earthquakes or tremendous solar eruptions, solar blasts.
Yeah, you know, we just missed one. I was just going over a story in the beginning of the show here. We had just missed one. They said that it passed through Earth's orbit 2 weeks before Earth got to that spot. And if it was just, a couple weeks difference between us getting plastered.
Yeah, and it's when you hear people like political reporters like Alex Jones talking about it, which he did today, you know that it's extraordinary, because he tries to stay away from those celestial subjects.
Yes, he does. And if you hear him talking.
Right. And he knew how dangerous this was. He stated on his program today that he said this is probably could be worse than anything that the New World Order could throw at us.
Oh,
if we ever got hit, I mean, it would make the New World Order look like an anthill.
It would be, and, my biggest fear is we get hit with one of those and our power grid gets fried. And then we've got all these nuclear facilities, these power plants all over the place. I mean, eventually those things are going to start melting down.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, when those power plants, because they're been the powers that be are guided and run by people who are seeking their own wealth, and they care nothing about the welfare of the citizenry, of the nations. As a result, they have let these nuclear power plants age and become in disrepair. Mm-hmm. Also, they've designed them so that they have a electrical backup that would allow them to, they're depending upon commercial electricity to gracefully shut down these reactors so that they do not melt down. And it takes months to gracefully shut them down. Well, there's not enough emergency electricity available at any of these nuclear power plants to allow enough time for a graceful shutdown of a nuclear reactor. So therefore, we're going to have, as you say, multiple meltdowns, and there's so many nuclear power plants across the country. It's really disgusting and tragic and frightening what they have done. These people have done to the poor, innocent citizens of the world.
Oh, I know.
I mean, when you consider that, like, as someone had mentioned, Gerald Celente had mentioned that they had the opportunity decades ago to use thorium, which is not as damaging. It's sort of a benign nuclear material when it's in its radioactive form. Radioactive isotopes of thorium are not as destructive as radioactive uranium, but they chose uranium because they had a plan to use a depleted uranium, the waste material, for weaponry. And as a result, millions and millions of people are going to suffer and die from the radioactive emissions when these plants melt down.
And they don't care, because that's what they want. I mean, they want 3/4 of the population gone.
Right, and the documentation is very clear to verify what you're stating. It's absolutely true. They want to reduce the population, and the reason is the elite, the very small minority of the world, maybe several thousand, 6,000 men, it's estimated to be, who control the world. They know that if they allow the population to continue up to around 7 billion people, as it is approaching now, they will never be able to rule the world in a global dictatorship, because there will be rebellion. They just cannot control that many people. So they're desperately, not only do they want to wipe out what they had, what they estimate, what they state to be 12 out of 13 people on the earth, but they are desperate to do this because they're afraid of reprisals in the popular rebellion that would ensue when they take, when they seize control over the world.
Well, now, if it did end, say, by, you know, radiation exposure from these plants melting down or whatever, I mean, are they really prepared to stay under the ground for 1,000 years or for hundreds of years until the atmosphere came back? Or is there another plan here?
Well, someone told me, I spoke with an investigative reporter who had spoken to a former agent of one of the intelligence agencies. Now, this is only what I've been told. I don't know how true it is, but this particular agent, and I believe, I don't think I'm revealing anything by stating her name, Susan Arrigo, A-R-R-I-G-O. Her name has been on the internet already. What she told this investigative reporter with whom I had spoken, that their plan is to go create a nuclear war, but for, go underground first, and then when they come up some months later, they have developed the technology to clean up the nuclear waste, at least for over a certain region of the world where they would establish themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's what their plan is, to come up and clean out, you know, clean out some area of it so that it's decontaminated, and then establish their world dictatorship.
And have you, you've probably already had this run by you, the NASA document, the future, what, you know, their future plans are?
No, brief me on that.
It's NASA circa 2045, I think it's called. I don't have it right in front of me, but they talk about, you know, eliminating the population. They talk about, actually creating, I guess, like hybrid type humanoids, like robotics, that type of thing. I'll have to send you a copy of that, too. Pretty interesting stuff. Yeah, I don't have it right in front of me, but it's called NASA Circa Document. I think it's 2045, it's called. And it pretty much puts out their plan. They've got the, you know, everything they expect. Plan-wise, and part of that, they want to be able to delete humanity, delete us. So get rid of us, and then they want to create some kind of human race that, you know, will have a sole purpose, and when they're done with them, they could just, you know, hit the button, delete them.
Right, and there's also many of us have learned about technologies that they're employing that would produce cloned human beings, people who would be, have no moral character at all, who would obey every command. They would be human and physically, and they would be cloned. Warriors also, soldiers. So this is a further evidence to verify what you're stating. Also, we all know of the Georgia Guidestones down in near or in Elberton, Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
Where a person who remained anonymous gave himself a false name, John, was it J.C. Christian or some name like that, and provided the stone granite quarries. Companies down in Elberton, Georgia, gave them millions of dollars to develop these Georgia Guidestones. And we all have photographs of them. You can see them on the internet and see them in Alex Jones's documentary Endgame, wherein in eight languages they state that they want to keep the population of the world, or reduce the population of the world down to 500 million people. Now, this is their promise written in stone. How much more solid can the evidence be? If you reduce the population to 500 million, and we already have 6.5 billion. That's, they have to kill 12 out of every 13 people on planet Earth.
Sure, that's so, where cancers and AIDS and vaccines and all these other things they're doing come in. And I think that's one of the big reasons why they don't tell us about the natural cures that we know exist. And I have this document up now. It's called Future Strategic Issues, Future Warfare, circa 2025. And it says capabilities of the enemy after next ongoing worldwide technological revolution. And it says the bots, Borgs, and humans welcome you to 2025 AD. And you could just read on to this thing. It's got all kinds of DARPA projects and things that they plan on doing, some of it already in effect. It's
so, wow, we should start publishing that information.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Bots, Borgs, and cloned humans, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this is a subject that is so bizarre and frightening to many people. Yet we should just calmly know that God is the creator and controller of the world and the universe, that God is with us. We know we've been created. The evidence is just overwhelming, and that God loves us, so that this evil force that is planning to do in humanity can be fought, can be overcome with the power of faith in God and trust. And God will empower us to overcome this. So our first calling is to warn others, to forge ahead with righteousness, a sense of righteousness, truth, and justice. All of us must follow this calling from God, and that will overcome the fear, because these people are insane, but yet they are more afraid of us than we are of them, because we outnumber them tremendously, and they're acting in utter desperation and fear.
And that's why they want to disarm us, and that's why they want to take over the internet. And I mean, that's why they're doing these things.
Right.
Yeah.
So everyone has a responsibility, a moral calling to learn about this and warn others. And that's, and by doing that, we follow God. And instead of living the life of hedonism, enjoying our own personal lives and isolating ourselves from our neighbors, our fellow human beings, we must become a part of humanity and work with them, for each other. So in the face of these horrors, love for one another will flourish.
Absolutely. And, you know, here's just a little more of this. It says in one part of it, it's a very long document, and it is a real NASA document. It says, humans have taken over in the vastly shortened evolution of the planet. And some of the plans, global warming, pollution, deforestation. It says that of human species, geno design and repair, mind children. Well, what's that supposed to mean? Products, life forms, cross species, molecule breeding, directed evolution. And I'm telling you, as you go through this document and you start reading it, it just, if that doesn't shout out at you the evil that we've got in charge here on this planet, then I don't know what will. I mean, this, they've got it right in black and white.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to, people like you and I and so many others out there are waking up. We've already awakened, but there is that percentage of people who have a heroic nature. We're the kind of people who would, and many others too, are the kind of people who would try to save someone who's in danger, even if it meant risking our own lives. Whereas many others would just drive by or try to escape the danger and leave the victims to perish. So there is a minority of population in the world who will stand up and do the heroic thing And those are the ones who will come and join us as we alert as many people as possible to these oncoming horrors that are facing us.
That's
and
right.
It becomes more obvious to more and more and more people when they see how overwhelming and this dictatorship, this global dictatorship is, and they're shocked by the flagrant tyranny that is rapidly swept over our country. Many, many people are waking up and coming to the aid of their fellow citizens with truth.
That's right. And, you know, for me, I mean, if I knew something and I knew it would get me killed to expose it, but I knew it would also free humanity, I would do it. I would spill the beans. And there's so many out there who claim that they're trying to give the truth, that they're trying to, they're there for the people. And but then they'll come right out and tell you, well, I can't tell you everything because they'll kill me. Well, if you're worried about that, you know, the bottom line is for those who think they're going to turn their head and that, you know, they could just look away and it'll be gone. You know, that old children thing where if I cover my eyes and I don't see you, you're not there. Eventually, it's going to come to their door, too. So, you know, everybody needs to get together, get on the same page, and we do outnumber them. And, you know, I hear so many times people say, well, they've got better weapons. They've got bigger guns. Yeah, they do. But so do you want to just sit and be a sitting duck, or do you, you know, you want to go out trying? I want to go out trying because I personally think that God helps those who help themselves. I don't, you know, you can't just sit there. That's like a job. You can't sit there and wait for someone to come to your door and say, hey, I've got a job for you. You got to go out and look for it. I mean, people have got to take charge of their own lives. They've got to be their own leaders. And, you know, that's why I do what I do, John. That's why you do what you do. We're trying to wake as many up as we can.
That's right. I mean, it's exciting, too, to be engaged in this struggle. Again, because it brings us to our spiritual culmination as human beings. If we had a life of ease, we would really have a life of poverty, spiritual poverty. So now we have a life that is spiritually rich because of the tribulations that are facing us all. And the few thousand men who rule this world, they have to depend upon many, many hundreds of thousands of soldiers and officers and policemen and stooges below them in order to follow their instructions. But when things become disastrous and people below them begin to wake up, those people are going to turn their weapons around toward and turn to our side. So all those high-tech weapons that they have, they're not going to be able to maintain control over those high-tech weapons, because it's like, you know, you go out and you the enemy, you take his weapon and use it against him. And that's what I think is inevitable, because there, most people, I would, you know, 999 out of 1,000 people will do the right thing when they see utter disaster facing the world. They're not going to be a part of the evil that destroys the world. So those soldiers and officers below them, on whom the power elite are depending to pull the trigger on us, those people are going to turn their weapons around and join our side.
That's right. You know, and that's the way I see it. I mean, I refuse to just sit back and let them do what they want. You know, I just refuse. I mean, if I'm going to go out, they're going to take me dead, because I'm just, you know, I want a free country. I want a peaceful world. I'm sick and tired of all the wars. I'm sick and tired of all the human experiments that they're doing. They're screwing with our children, and that's really, really getting under my skin. It always has. You know, they're dumbing everybody down. They talk about the war on drugs, and you got Big Pharma. And, I mean, here they are plowing these drugs into our children. Oh, ADHD this and ADHD that. And little three-year-olds got bipolar disease. We've got to put them on meds. And they're dumbing them down, and then they get into this education system. Somebody posted something very interesting the other day. It was a test, some kind of graduation test from 1912. And he posted it, and he guaranteed that most people, no matter how high their education was, whoever, you know, in the last 10 years has graduated or whatever from college, wouldn't be able to do it. And I'll tell you, there was a whole list of people who were saying, I've got this degree, that degree. They didn't understand any of it. That's how much they've been working on dumbing us down for such a long, long time. And, you know, the drugs, the television, they're giving people, what, 400 or 500 channels to watch. And people just want to do their job, come home, and watch TV and forget about it all. And I say turn off the fake news. You know, never mind the 400 channels. You know, wake somebody up. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to your friends and your family. And not everybody's going to be on board. Right. You know, you got these young kids who they don't know any different. This is how, they think it's always been this way.
But you know, Michael, as people suffer under the hands of this new world order, this global dictatorship, they're out of work. They have college degrees with tremendous debt, college borrowing debt that they cannot repay, and they're now unable to get a job. So they're living a life of indebtedness. And they are furious. They're resentful. And those people will become active. They can no longer afford to live in luxury and just tune out the rest of the world as they watch television. Because when you're tired and you're hungry and you're out of work, you turn off the television and you go out and you try to do something to recover your strength and your health and your life. And that's what people are doing.
That's right.
So the worse it gets, I hate to say it, but the worse it gets, the better it gets.
You know, that is true.
And popular support.
Yeah, that's true in so many ways. Sometimes people, you know, what a lot of people, they've got to hit rock bottom before they jump. I just hope that we have the time. You know, I've always have hope. Got to have hope. If there's no hope, then, I mean, what's the point, right? So it's just a matter of getting people to understand that. And I think a lot are now understanding that this isn't just some wacko on the radio with some weird conspiracy theories just to get ratings. I mean, we're telling people the truth here, and we're trying to wake them up to what's coming or what's going to come if they don't do something about it. And I'm not telling everybody to get out in the street and flip over cars and kick in old man Johnson's door on his store and raid his store. I'm telling you, people need to come together. There's peaceful ways of doing this. But we need to let them know that we're not going to let them get away with this no more. They've done 9/11, the Boston bombing. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And the more we let them get away with, the more they're going to continue to do. And it's going to get bigger.
Right, right. And so we're getting more popular support, definitely, because of the increasing suffering that's sweeping over our society. And we have to know, too, that God is guiding us. People begin to realize that even though we are great in numbers, we need God to guide us. And the Spirit of God, which we had really been oblivious to, is becoming more apparent to us because of the suffering that we're going through. If you don't look at nations historically, whenever they have suffered under tyranny, they have turned to God. This stimulates their interest in finding that greater power of good and love, and knowing that this power was their very creator. And that's what I've been doing, and that's what many others are doing. So in a way, it's good when you have physical poverty, you have spiritual richness. And that's what's happening to us today. But God is intervening, too, against this force of evil. And we have to look at it and realize that it's no longer a myth that there is a force of evil, which the Bible, God's word, tells us is called Satan. Is a real power with millions, literally billions probably, of demonic spirits. These spirits have been somehow recognized in by many people throughout the ages. If you look at the past civilizations that were greatly paralleled our great advanced empire of the United States and the Western world, there have been past civilizations that paralleled the United States, one of which was the great empire of Atlantis. And that civilization went through the very same demonic spiritual degradation that we're going through right now with cloning, with genetic engineering. All of that occurred according to the studies of ancient historians and the ancient records such as the Bible and the Colburn. These men of Atlantis were very much like the empire of the United States and Great Britain. They ruled the world. And because of they were going into creating new human beings and interfering with God's natural order, polluting, destroying the earth, destroying the species and all biological life, corrupting it, that God came and destroyed it with an incoming object. It was a wrecking ball from space. This wrecking ball has been preordained by God, who knows, according to the Bible and according to my spiritual studies, he knows the future before it occurs. So he knows exactly when humankind, the evil of humankind, will reach its peak and will need to be cleansed and destroyed while saving the few who are true and devoted to God. So many of us can look forward to the kind of survival that occurred thousands of years ago with the destruction of Atlantis, when huge tidal waves swept over the land masses, hundreds, thousands of feet high, inundating and sinking large land masses and destroying virtually everyone, but some were spiritually saved, supernaturally saved. That's about to happen again. Now, how could it happen? How would you explain such a seemingly mythical phenomenon, such as the sinking of continents? How would you explain it scientifically? Well, there is, you know, let's take a look, first of all, at the periodic nature of this event. This object, again, and I'm about to read you the evidence from NASA. Okay. Going back to 1983, where they actually acknowledged recognizing, discovering this object. Well, but so I'm not going to, this won't just be my own opinion. It will be based upon scientific evidence from NASA itself, numerous newspaper articles that were published before the National Security Agency, that evil agency that we're hearing about so much, yeah, before they suppressed all this information from NASA. So, but I'll tell you, give you the basic background before I give you the scientific U.S. government information that verifies it. Okay. This object is on a cometary orbit. And again, I've got my information from many researchers and who are in the fields of ancient history, in the field of astronomy, the fields of astrophysics, the Bible study, Bible prophecy, and also man's prophecy, word coming from God through prophets such as Edgar Cayce. All these various fields of human experience all converge together to point to the very same phenomenon that I'm talking about. This object is huge. It's again, NASA scientists believe it to be a brown dwarf star, which by definition, the very puniest brown dwarf star is about 3 Jupiter masses. And 1 Jupiter mass, well, the mass of Jupiter is equal to, if you look it up, 318 Earth masses. So 3 Jupiter masses, the very puniest brown dwarf star would be 3 Jupiter masses, or 3 times 318 Earth masses. So we're getting close to 1,000 Earth masses as being very conservatively small brown dwarf star, 1,000 Earth masses. We know that by Sir Isaac Newton's universal law of gravitation, that the larger a mass is, the greater its gravitational pull is upon nearby objects. And also we know that the distance of this massive, such a massive object to our Earth is the most influential factor in determining the magnitude of the pulling force. In fact, it's an exponential factor. That is, when if this huge 1,000 Earth mass brown dwarf star gets, say, a certain distance, so many millions of, say, 100 million miles from Earth, there'll be a certain degree of pulling force upon the Earth. Now, when this object gets half that distance, so it goes from 100 million miles away to, say, 50 million miles away, that means it reduces its distance from us by a half. The pulling force doesn't just double. The pulling force quadruples, becomes four times greater upon Earth. And continuing on, if this object gets one-third of the distance, one-third of its original distance away, then the pulling force does not increase by three times. It increases by nine times. So it's a factor of the distance, inverse distance squared. And that's what's about to happen as this object gets near to us. The pulling force will cause Earth's crust and Earth's fluid-like, viscous, pudding-like mantle beneath the crust to wave and to go into undulations. And this is how the mountains were formed. Any geologist who is logical and insightful will look at mountain ranges from above, from an aerial view, and see that the mountain ranges of the Earth look like a rumpled blanket. You take a blanket and you shake it out so that it has all these rumples and ridges in it. Well, that's exactly what the Earth's crust looks like. And of course, the crust is not as pliable as a blanket. So what happens, it's like trying to shake out a pie crust. When you try to shake it out, it's going to split and crack. And at the very peaks, that's where the splitting is going to occur. That's exactly the kind of structure that we have with mountain ranges, where the peaks jut up sort of in a jagged way. So all of the topography of the Earth shows that we have had these events that caused rippling of the Earth to create the mountain ranges. The Bible itself even speaks about this in many places in the Psalms, how the mountain ranges were formed. The mountains would ripple. That's the kind of wording that the Bible uses.
That's right.
Also, land masses were oceans. Right after the Great Flood, thousands of years ago, that inundated the Earth, sea levels were much higher on the shore than they are now. And then what happened, after the Great Flood, there was another passage of this object, because it comes by every several thousand years, almost like clockwork. And that inundation, or that passage, caused the ocean ridges to open up, and they've discovered these ocean ridges, and they've discovered great vast quantities of water below the seabeds of the oceans. And the water went down in between those spaces and to preserve cavities below the ocean floors. And that's how we see now that the sea levels are lower than they were thousands of years ago.
Yeah, and you know, and more proof for people, if anyone doesn't think it can happen, is you could look at several of the findings below the ocean, on the ocean floor, of cities, of pyramids and all kinds. I'm sure they didn't build that stuff underwater. I'd have to guess that the water overcame them.
That's a good point. You know, somebody sent me some. I still have them on my email server, these Google Earth pictures that show the ocean beds, and you can actually see geometrically even lines and corners below the seabed that indicate that there were civilizations, man-made civilizations, that are buried beneath the sea. So I've got to get those out of my email and send them on to you so we can study them, and we could probably find people. Thank goodness for the internet, because any subject under the sun, any of the millions and millions of studies that exist are always all displayed on the internet. So we could probably find people who have studied this and shown, verified this phenomenon of man-made cities buried or sunk beneath the oceans.
Oh, absolutely.
And I have a video too, and others too now are bringing it out. But this video I have called The Jupiter Menace, and I actually put it up on YouTube, on my YouTube channel. Yeah, folks, if you want to go and take a look at some of the information I have on YouTube, I've got a lot of stuff on the New World Order, on the movie America, which is the elite's presentation to us of how they plan to rule the world with the Russian army subordinating and subjugating the people. I've got 58 episodes of that very long movie, America, on my YouTube channel. Just type in, I guess you can type in my name, but you'll probably get a lot of interviews. Just type, the name is John DiNardo, DiNardo, first name John, and try to find my YouTube channel. You'll see among the many presentations there is this video. I don't know if I've given it the name Jupiter Menace, but it shows, talks about the coming disasters. It was made in the early 1980s. They didn't know about Planet X. They thought it would be caused, the great disasters on Earth would be caused by some kind of an alignment with Jupiter that would cause tremendous gravitational pull. But they were on the right track. Well, in this presentation, they showed a wide variety of evidence to indicate that these gravitational disruptions of Earth's crust have occurred in the past, thousands of years ago. And they, you'll see in a YouTube presentation of mine that they discovered there was a psychic, and this is where it gets really fascinating and spiritually stimulating to know that somehow a man, in this case, there were numerous men who had these psychic abilities from God, but there was one man in particular. His name was Alex Tanous, T-A-N-O-U-S. He's passed away since that movie was made and the documentary was made in the early 1980s. But they called upon Alex Tanous to find lost civilizations beneath the sea. And what he said in this was just remarkable. He said, "So I went to find this evidence and I did an out-of-body experience. That means a part of me went down beneath the ocean and found this lost city. It was amazing to see. It was marble roads, marble staircases, spiral staircases, temples, columns, pyramids. It was the most spectacular thing I've ever seen." This man was envisioning the way it looked in its pristine condition before it was sunk beneath the ocean.
Amazing. And if I could really quick, and there's another good point as to why I don't believe that this stuff was built under the water, because why would you need a staircase?
Oh, right. Absolutely. I mean, he saw temples. He said he saw temples, staircases, spiral staircases, columns, buildings. He said the whole thing was just amazing to see. Now, in his vision, he didn't actually go there. He did an out-of-body experience. Somehow he went back in time. We find this hard to believe. Everyone, of course, finds it very difficult to believe such a thing. But when the movie continues on, and you see the host, the actor George Kennedy. He's on this yacht that is sailing out to look to find this place that Alex Tanis had identified in his prophetic vision, in his out-of-body experience. And George Kennedy says a lot of people didn't take Alex Tanis seriously until they sent divers out to the coordinate locations where he had stated that these objects were undersea. And they found this 1,000-yard-long wall off the coast of Florida called the Bimini Road. Bimini Road. And they reached a point where they stopped the yacht, and they did a sonar sounding beneath the point where Alex Tanis had said there was buildings, and they found this pyramid. And they actually showed in the video the sonar picture of a pyramid with a capstone missing, just like the Illuminati show us their pyramid with its capstone missing. The capstone waiting for the culmination of their god, Horus, the eye at the top of the pyramid. So you see, this is just remarkable and incredible. It transcends logical, our own physical world of reality, and it takes us into a world where we see evidence that is of a supernatural nature. These people, the civilization of the past, Atlantis, was just like this civilization of today, with evil men ruling, evil men worshiping a god that they called Lucifer, whose real name is Satan, the adversary of God. So thousands of years ago, men worshiped this god, Lucifer, and today they're doing the same thing. And it's all been brought to our minds supernaturally by men who had this power of prophetic power, such as people such as Alex Tanis and Edgar Cayce. Edgar Cayce, and I have his book. Anyone can get it. It's in paperback. It was published. It's a publication of many of his in-trance readings, his prophetic sleep dream readings that he had stated when he was in an unconscious state. He would go into a hypnotic state. And his purpose, of course, was not to look into the past, but to heal people. He healed thousands upon thousands of people. All of it is documented at the Association for Research and Enlightenment at Virginia Beach, Virginia. Edgar Cayce had documentably cured many people whom he had never met. His son, Hugh Lynn Cayce, on this documentary that I have and another documentary, Hugh Lynn Cayce states that truckloads of mail would come to Edgar Cayce, who lived in around the 1930s, truckloads of mail of people begging him for readings, where he would go into a trance and diagnose these people whom he had never met and find out what their disease was.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I believe in this phenomena. I believe that there are people who have some sort of psychic abilities, people like Edgar Cayce who was able to heal people. I think that it was meant for probably all of us to be able to heal ourselves with our minds, but we've been brainwashed through the years. But I got a question about the passage of Planet X. It said that it's supposed to go by every 3,600 years. So I would have to assume, based on geologists, they do these tests on rocks, and I guess they can tell by the magnetic field in these rocks when the last time the poles had flipped, or we had a pole shift. And I would have to assume that then at some point, sometimes when this thing comes around, it must not be so bad, because apparently, wasn't it over 10,000 years ago, the last pole shift? So I guess I'd kind of wonder, you know, if the last time it came by, why it didn't flip us around.
I don't know how serious it was. I know there were passages from our evidence that occur every 36 and a half centuries. Mm-hmm. So if you go back 36 and a half centuries, you find evidence of major disasters on Earth. Now, whether this object, this brown dwarf star, got close enough to actually rotate the Earth vertically or not, I'm not sure. I believe there was some degree of pole shift, because remember, a pole shift doesn't have to turn the Earth upside down.
Right.
Incidentally, Michael, am I talking loud enough, or is my voice, or are people not hearing me too well?
No, you are absolutely fine, because I've now, with this new studio that we have, I'm able to control the volume on your end, which I couldn't do last time you were on. So believe me, you're loud and clear.
Okay. Very often, it depends on how close it gets. It doesn't have to turn this pulling force that occurs from this gravitational body passing by Earth does not have to be so great that it flips the Earth upside down so that the North Pole becomes the South Pole and the South Pole becomes the North Pole. That doesn't happen. What happens is you have a partial vertical rotation of the Earth. This has been stated by the great scientists and a great man of knowledge, Dr. Emmanuel Velikovsky, who many people, including James McCanny and many other people, look to with great respect. Emmanuel Velikovsky wrote numerous books, Worlds in Collision, Ages in Chaos, and another book, I'll remember it in a minute. But in Worlds in Collision, he talked about these disasters that can be shown to parallel the Bible's description. So we've had pole shifts every single time this object passed, every one of its periodic passages at 36 and a half century intervals. So if you go back 36 and a half centuries and you study, go to Wikipedia and find out about the tree rings around the world, in the North American continent and in Great Britain and in various other places, tree rings became very narrow at a point in time about 36 and a half centuries ago. And fortunately, with tree rings, they can, the scientists can give us quite an accurate determination of the time when the tree rings were narrowed, because you can count the tree rings. So they go back, they can tell us 36 and a half centuries ago, plus or minus as few as 10 or 20 years, with that much accuracy, that much resolution chronologically. Why would tree rings be narrowed at this point when a great destruction occurred on Earth? Well, the Earth's core becomes very hot. The molten iron core begins to bubble up, sort of like a pot that's being overheated on your stove, and it begins to bubble up just like a pot of stew would bubble up if you forgot to lower the gas. And now all these volcanoes around the world begin to erupt, and you have volcanic ash enveloping the entire atmosphere of the planet Earth. And when that happens, sunlight is blocked out, species begin to die off, vegetation dies, trees become very withered, and that explains why the tree rings would be narrowed. So 36 and a half centuries ago, we had the great volcanic blanketing of the Earth.
Okay, John, hold it right there, and we'll pick right back up where we left off. We've got to take a quick break here. So we are discussing pole shifts. We're discussing celestial objects coming our way, changing our day to night, maybe. This is Late Night in the Midlands on the L&M Radio Network. My guest is John DiNardo, and you are more than welcome to call in if you've got a question or a comment. But John, getting back to the tree rings, I think is where we left off.
Right, we have the ecological evidence that 36 and a half centuries ago, the tree rings were narrowed, and that would certainly have been caused by a global blanketing of ash around the world, which blocked off sunlight, killed species, and also devastated vegetation. But also we have to confirm that 36 and a half century ago date, around 1650 BC, we have another event, which was the explosion of the great Santorini volcano in the Aegean Sea. Geologists tell us that that explosion of the caldera, meaning cauldron, with a large basin of water atop the volcanic mountain, when it exploded, it occurred approximately 36 and a half centuries ago, around 1650 BC. So you have two confirming events. One is the ecological evidence of the tree rings being narrowed, and the other is the geological evidence of the explosion of the Santorini volcano. When that volcano exploded, it destroyed the highly advanced, wiped out the highly advanced civilization of the Minoans, M-I-N-O-A-N-S, who lived nearby on the island of, near the island of Crete in the Aegean Sea. And just south of the Aegean Sea, of course, was Egypt, where the Israelites under Moses lived. They were in bondage to the Egyptians, and in the Bible, we have biblical evidence to confirm the great explosion of the Santorini volcano. If you look at the book of Exodus, chapter 9, when the Israelites were trying to escape from Egyptian land of Egypt to be covered with hot burning ash at that moment that you cast the ashes up. So God was going to sort of create a supernatural event to give supernatural credence to Moses, power of Moses over Pharaoh's rulership. And that there was a symbolic casting up of ashes. And at that moment, ordained by God, that blanket of ash from the Santorini caldera explosion had drifted southward to Egypt. And the Bible says it covered the entire land of Egypt, and cinders, hot cinders, burnt the face of the Egyptian ruler and his magicians at that time. So there's biblical evidence to confirm that. But we still need to prove that 36 and a half centuries ago, does that prove that if Planet X is about to pass now? Well, we need to go back again to the previous passage before the time of Moses, before 1650 BC, and go back another 36 and a half centuries. Well, if we look at the scientific geological evidence compiled by two geologists, Pittman and Ryan, P-I-T-M-A-N, I believe, and Ryan, R-Y-A-N, you can look them up. They did geological studies of the Black Sea, and they found that sea became so filled with water around 5300 BC that there was a great overflow, and they show the seabed evidence to indicate that. Excuse me. 5300 BC, another great devastation occurred on planet Earth, geological devastation, and that would have been the previous passage of Planet X. So now we have two dates to nail down and confirm the orbital period of this comet, this long period comet, because if you do the arithmetic and subtract 5300 BC from 1650 BC, which was the time of the Israelites in Egypt, you come up with a difference of 36 and a half centuries. Furthermore, we can add greater confidence to that determination of the period being 36 and a half centuries by going back another 36 and a half centuries previous to 5300 BC. And that would take us back, if you do the arithmetic, that would take us back around 8900 BC or 9000 BC, to give you an even number. Well, many researchers, including the Horizon Project, You can find them on the internet, thehorizonproject.com. These are great researchers into these earth disasters. They and others believe that the sinking of Atlantis occurred around 9,000 BC. They have done, somebody found a lot of the evidence that other scientists have, and archaeologists have discovered, and that is the age of the Mississippi River. And Brent Miller, one of the members of the Horizon Project team, tells you that you can essentially determine the age of the Mississippi River just by measuring the amount of silt that has accumulated in the Gulf of Mexico from the downflow of the Mississippi River over throughout the ages. And through that and other geological evidence, they found that the splitting of the continents and the creation of the Mississippi as a result of that great split of the continents occurred around 9,000 BC, just by counting the years of the number of years in which the silt flowed through the Mississippi. So the great splitting and the creation of the Mississippi occurred around 9,000 BC. Well, there we go. We've got two dates, several dates actually, to confirm the periodic orbital period of this planet X. 9,000 BC, 5,300 BC being, well, 9,000 BC being the sinking of Atlantis, when the continents were actually split and Africa separated, the American continent separated from Europe and Africa. That was 9,000 BC, 5,300 BC, the great flood of Noah's day, 5,300 BC. And then the Israelites escaped from Egypt when God, in the Bible, throughout the book of Exodus, tells us of 10 great geological disasters that God brought upon the Pharaoh of Egypt, who would not release the Israelites from bondage. And he speaks about God in the Bible, Exodus, book of Exodus, talks about hailstones coming down, like fire and hail. It's just an awesome description if you visualize it. Rocks coming down like machine gun bullets piercing the ground with flames trailing along them, almost like the kind of scene you see in a movie where a machine gun is fired and it penetrates the sand or the dirt, and you see flashes of light coming up. Well, that's the kind of description you see in the book of Exodus, with these rocks mingled with electrical fire trailing along the rocks, piercing the ground. That particular awesome phenomenon is also predicted in the book of Revelation, where I believe it's Revelation chapter 6, where the Bible says that in the end times, there will be fire mingled with blood cast upon the earth. It says fire mingled with blood. Well, that's just pretty much what you read in Exodus. So scientifically, we could say that this is a repeat. This forthcoming disaster upon earth will be a repeat of the disasters that occurred in the book of Exodus, only worse, because Planet X will evidently come closer to Earth than it did around 1650 BC. The book of Exodus also tells us, if we want to know tomorrow's news today, we can look back at Exodus and find out what this object did. The Bible tells us that there were great, the waters turned red. I mean, it said all the water in Egypt, all the lakes, the rivers.
And you know what, John, that just happened in China not too long ago, a few months ago. I remember seeing an article where one of their rivers turned red.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you know, sit up and wonder, realize that this is a prophetic manifestation, and that we have to try to understand what's going on. Some people have attributed the turning of the waters to the color red as algae, growth of algae. It certainly That's happening. It's been seen. The Weather Channel reported cases of red tide in the past. I know it because I've been following the Weather Channel for the last more than about 10 or 11 years. So this is red phenomenon that definitely has been occurring. Also, probably the main reason for the rivers waters turning red will be the red iron oxide dust. That is a dust cloud that's dragged in, gravitationally dragged in by this huge brown dwarf star. Its gravitational pull is so great that it actually pulls in a huge entourage of surrounding objects as it travels through deep space on its way toward our solar system. And it gravitationally captures all sizes of objects, from small planets, large comets, asteroids, meteors, boulders, rocks, and even iron oxide dust. And sightings of Planet X that we have already, some esoteric sightings, one of which was taken by someone who seemed to be a whistleblower from the South Pole Telescope, the secretive South Pole Telescope of the United States government. Somebody leaked photos from that, and Marshall Masters happened to get a photo of it before it was promptly taken down from YouTube. And this object shows a red haze. It sort of looks like a red candle flame that's being carried through the air, and you can see it trailing a tail behind it. But it's engulfed in a red haze, and that's probably due to the iron oxide dust. Mm-hmm. So what happens is, when this object gets close enough to Earth, the gravitational pull of Earth begins to suck in all this surrounding debris around this large brown dwarf star. And even some of the accompanying comets around it get close to Earth, and they become like smaller versions of the menacing dwarf star. And their surrounding debris begins to get sucked into Earth, and that's how you get these hailstones. Not only ice hail, which we see meteorologically developed, large hailstones are occurring today with the crazy weather we're having, but also rocks that are actually sucked in. They come within Earth's gravitational field, they get pulled in by Earth, and they plummet to the ground. We see meteors, the one in Russia, the meteor that struck Russia. And, you know, some evidence for that, the debris field, is the fact that back around January, I think it was, of this year, that large comet that struck a meteor that struck Russia caused great disaster there. Many people were killed and injured there, and lots of property was destroyed. I think it was January of this year. On that very same day, the Weather Channel and all the big news stations were saying an asteroid was due to pass very close, dangerously close by Earth. And on that very same day, the meteor struck not only Russia, but another meteor struck Cuba. Other meteors, I think about 6 meteor strikes occurred around the world on the very same day that this ominous asteroid was passing.
You're right.
An asteroid is larger than a meteor. I'm sorry, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, no, I just was saying, you're right. I was just going to bring that up. It wasn't just in Russia. It was Cuba. I understand that parts of Florida seen one whipping by. I mean, so there was quite a few of them, from what I understand.
Right. So what that tells you is that whenever you have a large object that gets sucked into Earth's gravitational field and gets pulled into Earth, toward Earth, there is bound to be, or most likely will be, many accompanying smaller rocks, boulders, meteors around it that are will also be sucked in. And
right.
That's exactly what happened here. We see evidence of that. There is going to be a lot of debris, a lot of garbage that's going to be pulled in and falling to the earth. And that's what the Bible describes in the book of Exodus, when these rocks, hail, came plunging to the ground like machine gun bullets, with fire trailing along the hailstones, the lines of hailstones that came plummeting to the earth. why would there be fire? Well, if you realize that these objects are drenched in plasma. Now, plasma is simply electrified gas, ionized hydrogen. And you can visualize it. I look at it as, visualize it as sort of a red glowing haze. That's my visual characterization of it. It doesn't necessarily have to appear red, but it's electrified particles, ions. Each one has a positive electrical charge. And there are, you know, great clouds of these ions that surround, cling to these space objects, these boulders, these meteors, these asteroids. Just like static electricity clings to us when we, or clings to styrofoam particles. You know, do you ever try to dip into a box with packing where they use styrofoam peanuts or these little styrofoam beads? I really hate when they use that kind of packing. I wish they would use paper, because that stuff sticks to your clothing, sticks to your hands. I mean, you have to shake just to get rid of it. And we've all experienced that. And that is a phenomenon of static cling, static electrical pull.
Yeah.
That's precisely what happens to these objects when they come into our electrified heliosphere, which surrounds our entire solar system. It's a cloud of this hydrogen plasma gas that surrounds the entire solar system like a huge sphere. When they penetrate into the solar system, they get engulfed with the sticky, electrically sticky plasma, just like a bee flying into a big bubblegum bubble would become engulfed with sticky bubblegum. Mm-hmm. So that's what we have. We have electrical stickiness. But now it's being pulled as the object gets close to Earth. The electrical charge is attracted to Earth, which is ground potential, which is essentially zero electrical potential relative to the high positive electrical voltage potential of the static electricity. As a result, you have a discharge to ground, just like you would discharge your hand when you're walking toward your car on a cold day and you go to touch the door handle of the car. When your finger gets within a fraction of an inch away from the door handle, all of a sudden there's a spark and a zap that's very painful. A painful sting occurs to your hand. That's actually represents 1,000 or more volts of electricity, believe it or not. It doesn't kill you because there's not enough current, electrical charge, current flowing to kill you, but it's a very high voltage. And that's what causes this arcing or discharge. Well, on a macrocosmic scale, that same phenomenon occurs when these objects drenched in electrical plasma get close to Earth, close enough that they overcome the insulative properties of the air, of the atmosphere, and they discharge to Earth. And that's how you get this electrical fire that the Bible talks about. Fire trailing the falling rocks. That's what we have to look forward to. And it's prophesied, as it occurred in Exodus, and it's prophesied to occur again in the book of Revelation, meaning the revelation of the future end of the world. It says, fire mingled with hail, blood and fire mingled with hail were cast upon the earth.
Well, you know, I think it's fantastic the way you just described that, the way you put the words into, you know, the picture in the head. Because it's the same way I just explained this to my son, who's probably listening and now thinks his dad's smart tonight, but because he asked about it, and he said, you know, he's taking an interest in Planet X now, and you know, I'm trying to ease him and tell him, you know, it's nothing to get too concerned about right now. He's still young, but and he asked, he says, well, what would happen? I was explaining how the debris field that would come with this thing. And, you know, he wanted to know about it. And I says, well, you know, little styrofoam beads that you get in a box, you know, when something's packed. I says, well, if you got a balloon and you rub that balloon on your head and you got it staticky and you ran it by those styrofoam particles, they would stick to it. I said, well, that's basically what it's doing. It's pulling things with it, except for it's going so fast that when it makes a turn, some of that debris is going to break off and come our way. So was I right, I guess?
You were. You were definitely right.
Okay.
And again, we saw evidence that evidence that is so little publicized. We should more widely publicize the evidence that occurred, again, in that meteorite strike on Russia. I believe it was January of this year, where at the very same day when the asteroid passed, so we see that some of the asteroid's companion objects were sucked in as the asteroid passed dangerously close to Earth. And even Al Roker on the Weather Channel ridiculed the lies of the NASA when NASA stated that, oh, it was just a coincidence that that meteor happened to strike Russia on the very same day that this asteroid was scheduled to pass dangerously close by Earth. And even Al Roker made a joke about how ridiculous it was to try to dissociate those two events. They were obviously connected. So that's what we have to look forward to. It's just one of the things. And the Bible told us, again, if we want to know tomorrow's news today, look at the book of Exodus and start reading all the plagues that occurred. The waters turned red because when this object passed by, its cloud, surrounding cloud of iron red iron oxide dust sweeps the earth. And it said in the book of Exodus that not only the streams and the rivers turned red and foul and polluted and you couldn't even drink it, the water, but even the water vessels where they carried their water in the urns, that turned red too. So that tells me it's something other than red tide. Red tide would affect the waters, the lakes and the streams, but it would not affect the vessels where they held their pure water. But that's exactly what the Bible says happened.
That's right.
So it would be a sweeping of iron oxide dust across the land.
Yeah.
That's what we have to...
And that's another good point because, a lot of these plagues, my colleague Peter Kling talks about this quite often. And with a lot of these plagues, they could be explained. I mean, like the frogs, you get something whirling that water up, it's going to suck them up into the sky and, well, then it's going to rain frogs. And, so these different things can be explained. I didn't mean to interrupt you. It's just.
No, it's
fascinating. You're going down the road that I'm thinking. So carry on.
I'm glad to hear your comments because they fuel our thoughts.
Yeah, they do. So go ahead. What else do we have?
Well, there, another one of the plagues that occurred, as you say, was an inundation of frogs. Now, we have seen, I've studied this to some degree. What happens when you have disturbances of the earth caused by gravitational pull of a large passing object? It disturbs the crust of the earth and it causes fractures and clashing of large areas of land in an earthquake, a pre-earthquake situation where the plates, the tectonic plates, the land masses that are already broken, separated from one another along fault lines, begin to clash and move. Now, I learned many years ago when I studied electronics, even in my at the Naval Air Technical Training Center in Memphis, Tennessee, when I first got into electronics, they taught us of the piezoelectric effect, P-I-E-Z-O electric effect. And that is caused when two crystals, when a crystal is impacted physically, like with a hammer, when that happens, when a crystal is impacted, it generates a very high voltage, which can generate electricity. An example of the application of a piezoelectric crystal would be with the cigarette lighters. I don't know if they still have them, where you snap it and it makes you hear a little crack. A little tiny hammer hits a little crystal and generates perhaps 1,000 or 2,000 volts.
Oh, little snappers.
To create
a
spark across a gap, just like a spark plug in a car.
You're talking about those little snappers. They're like packed in sawdust, and you smack them on the ground, and they... Tsh.
Oh, that's something I haven't been aware of, but you're probably right. I mean, that's another application of it. But they used to have lighters years ago. I guess they don't have them anymore. I don't smoke, so I don't know. But where you push down on the lever end, it makes a little crack because a hammer is striking the crystalline, generating a voltage. The voltage is high enough to jump across a very narrow electrode gap, and when that creates a spark, it ignites the butane in the lighter, and that's how you get the light. The same phenomenon, the same principle is applied in the gas, in your gas range. Do you have, if anybody has a gas stove, they know that there's a cracking sound that occurs when you turn the knob on the gas range to turn on the gas.
Yeah.
That cracking sound is followed by accompanied by a spark that jumps across a spark plug gap, and that's what ignites the natural gas. So again, what we have is a high voltage generated whenever a crystal is impacted. Well, the impact occurs on a very large scale when two tectonic plates clash with or rub against one another. Okay, so this is happening under the ground as the earth becomes disturbed. Even today, the disturbances are becoming increasing in frequency and increasing in intensity. And when these impacting tectonic plates impact one another, they generate very, very high voltages and currents across the gap or the fault gap between the rubbing or clashing plates. That generates an extremely high voltage, and electrical current flows through the ground, electrically zapping and stinging all the varmints and the life below, the creatures below the earth, the worms, frogs perhaps. Many of them live below. The reason I know that is because in China we have a photograph. I still have it on my hard drive, and it's still on the internet. It shows, preceding the major earthquake in China back in 2005, I think it was, or 2008. Mm-hmm. These people in China are riding around on a street on their bicycles, and throngs of frogs are coming swarming out of the ground. And as soon as I saw that, I said, wow, that's in the Bible. That's in the book of Exodus, an inundation of frogs. And they would come out because they're stimulated. They're being stung, and they're trying to escape all the pain that's electrifying them beneath the ground.
That makes sense.
And friends have told me they saw before earthquakes or before pre-earthquake situations where they saw worms and insects coming out of the ground. So look for that if you want to try to detect an earthquake. Look for that. I saw one documentary where this one man is trying to prove. You know, it shows you how dumb scientists are, really, or not so much dumb, but they're just so narrow-minded. This one man is trying to prove that the piezoelectric effect, that is the clashing of large crystalline landmasses, is an indication of a coming earthquake. He's trying to prove this with great scientific studies and experiments, and he's pleading with scientists to recognize this phenomenon as an early warning of earthquakes in order to save thousands of lives. And people don't seem to be listening. Scientists don't seem to be listening to him. Maybe they are now, but it's very frustrating.
Yeah, I think the best way to know that an earthquake is coming or any danger like that is keep your eye on the animals. You see the animals disappearing, then you know something's probably about to happen.
That's a good point. You know, Art Bell had mentioned right after the great tsunami of Christmas 2004 and around Thailand and in the Indian Ocean, what was it, Indonesia, that area, right prior to that tsunami, he said there were no animals that were killed at all.
Yeah.
Because they had all fled maybe an hour or so before the tsunami struck. They all fled to high ground.
That's right.
He got this report from it wasn't just his statement, but he was reading it from the Washington Post.
That's right. That there were
they could not find any dead animals.
Right. No animal carcasses whatsoever. Could they find?
And Jim Berkland is a famous geologist. He's retired. He used to work for the U.S. Geological Survey. Jim Berkland predicted the San Francisco World Series earthquake a number of years ago.
Where
the earthquake actually interrupted the World Series during a night game. And he says that one of the things he uses several, you know, parameters to determine when an earthquake is likely. And one of those parameters is lost pet reports. He'll go to the newspapers, check out the newspapers, and find out if having followed the lost pets reports during normal times, he knows what a normal number of lost pets should be during any given week or any given period of a few days. So when that increase occurs, the increase in number of lost pets reported in the newspapers, then he's got an indication. That's a very clever anecdotal way of indicating a coming earthquake.
Yeah, and animals can even, I mean, they even use them for people who have those epileptic seizures. They use them for that, too. I mean, these dogs are able to detect when something's about to happen to somebody. So these animals are so in-tuned.
That's something I never knew.
Oh, yeah. The
epileptic seizures can be predicted by animals.
Yeah, wow. The dog will come up and he'll give the sign. He knows it's about to happen. And, you know, this way the person who's about to go through it can get in a safe position before it happens. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's just wonderful that God gave us so much in the way of animals and so many other things, too.
Yeah,
that he gave us these wonderful animals.
And we abuse, not you and I, but mankind abuses these gifts that have been given to us. I mean, you look what they're doing to the different animals around the globe, the dolphins, the seals, and, you know, I seen a video recently that just absolutely disgusted me. There's an organization in China that goes and rounds up these dogs and cats and skins them alive. I mean, just literally cuts them and pulls their fur right off of them. And, I seen it, and I tell you, I wish I never watched it. It was just...
I mean, you would think that there would be people, compassionate dog lovers, animal lovers, all over the world, not just here. But I guess, I mean, in China, there's so much evil. It's just like inundating. I mean, there are many good people there, too. But there's, I guess there are people who are gotten technologically developed very rapidly. And as a result, they have lost their moral compass. Many of them have. They kill one another. You know, many people organs are taken from them.
Oh yeah, they kidnap people and they say, you know what? And I wouldn't put it past the United States that type of thing isn't happening here too.
It's happening. I mean, we're just our people and people around the world are becoming just as evil because the evil entities. Again, we have to look at the spiritual aspect of it. The Bible tells us many things that are quite well proven. We see proven in our lives. Spiritual entities are foretold to envelop our earth, engulf our earth, and to indwell people. I've seen it in myself, you know, long before I turned to God, where I did bad things to people, and I didn't know why. I mean, nothing really criminal, but hurtful things. And I'm very regretful. It pains me to think about it now, how callous I was. And that was because of, you know, a spirit that was misled by demonic entities. Again, where, you know, the Lord Jesus, who is the Son of God, and many people may not believe that he's God, but many people do believe that he always told the truth, never lied. And one thing he says is that, if you're not with us, with me, you're against me. And he also says it in other ways too, indicating that when evil spirits, unclean spirits are driven out of a person, he drove unclean spirits out of many people who are doing evil things, who are actually insane, insanely evil.
Yeah.
And he drove out the evil spirit. So we see that this is occurring today with us. And he tells us that is a phenomenon where these spirits, actually, you cannot see them. They are from another dimension. They are in another dimension, and they do influence man's behavior. And that's why man is becoming more and more evil. The Bible says that iniquity will wax worse and worse. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, no, I was just going to agree with you and, you know, collaborate a little bit that, you know, I think back when I was a lot younger, you know, the people that I've hurt, you know, things that I didn't, I never gave it a second thought then. And then I get older, and maybe that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now. I don't know, trying to balance it out so I can get in through that gate when the time comes. But, you know, you think back and you just can't believe that you were so heartless and so self-serving. I mean, you know, and at one time I'd have to say I was.
You know. Well, you and I mean, because your experience seems to parallel mine during my youth, I believe that both of us are now indwelled by the Spirit of God, and God has driven out those demonic spirits and saved us from that. Now, God tells us in the Bible, again, it's very important to look at these prophecies from the Bible, because our lives are now going to be affected by everything that's happening. We can no longer look at it as myth, inconsequential myth, and unimportant triviality. We have to look at it as something, phenomenon that is promised to affect our lives in a devastating way or in a redeeming way, whether we want, and we are going to either sink or swim, survive or die based upon these prophecies. That we must look at them with great care and prayer, that these demonic spirits are prophesied in the Bible to inundate the world through another dimension. There are different dimensions, and I don't want to get too much into it because it's very hard to prove, but scientists even today are proving that through black holes they have believed that other dimensions, theorizing, or, you know, but theories are gaining greater and greater support, that through black holes, one dimension of existence can be found, other dimensions beyond ours. And that's how these beings come to us, evidently. So we cannot see them, but they can see us.
And one of the listeners asked if you are familiar with Bigfoot spirits.
No, I'm not. I mean, in general, with spiritual effects in my life, evil spirits, yes. I don't know about Bigfoot spirits in particular. I can't say that I am.
Okay, and getting back onto the black hole thing now, somebody asked me a very interesting question earlier today, and it's one of those things that made me go, huh. We're told that there's a black hole at the center of our galaxy, am I right?
Yes.
Then why, this is the question, and I thought it was a good one, why is it every picture we see of the galaxy, we see a very bright spot right in the middle? Why is it so bright?
I don't know, because a black hole has no light at all. Black hole is so dense, has such a tremendous inward gravitational pull, that even light cannot escape from it, and that's why they call it a black hole. I don't know why you'd see a bright light in the center of it.
I don't know. But
it could be a phenomenon that's, you know, like that. Certainly something that's related to the black hole. It surely seems to be that way, because the black hole is believed to be at the center of the galaxy, and everything spins around it in a sort of a disk of dust, a dust-like disk. Each particle of dust being, you know, an entire solar system, you know, large masses. But if you look on it at a great distance or on a great macrocosmic view, you would see this black hole with a disk spinning around it like a disk of dust.
I
and
see.
That's our, billions of solar systems.
Yeah, because after he had mentioned this to me earlier, I said, well, let me go to Google Images and, you know, and I start looking at pictures of the galaxy. I'm like, he's right. It's like there's this, the brightest spot always seems to be in the center. I don't know if it's got something to do with what's passing over the black hole or what. I don't know. But
yeah, it could be an aura around the black hole.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've actually taken pictures of, photographs of this, or if these, or if these are just drawings, you know, man-made pictures.
Right.
That's important. I don't know how they would get a photograph. Maybe they put the spot, the bright spot, they portrayed as a bright spot so that you could actually see it. I don't know. But how would they photograph the Milky Way galaxy in which our solar system resides?
I don't
think anybody's ever been able to do that.
I don't know. Maybe it's not our galaxy. Maybe it's other galaxies that the Hubble's taking pictures of or something. I don't know.
It could be. That's a tough one.
But
certainly at the center would be a black hole. And that's what draws everything around it and, you know, keeps everything, just as our sun is that great tremendous gravitational mass that keeps all the planets encircling it so that all the planets do not fly off tangentially into space. It's a gravitational pull of the sun, just sort of similar to the gravitational pull of a black hole.
I see. And go ahead.
But getting back to Planet X now, we know from the various time intervals between 9,000 BC, beginning with 9,000 BC, which scientists are beginning and archaeologists are beginning to realize was the sinking of Atlantis around 9,000 BC, because they can determine that the Mississippi River formed around that time. That was at the time of the splitting of the continents, when all the land masses sunk under 1,000-foot soon tidal waves, when God destroyed that great empire similar to America that was evil and ruling the world with the great evil. And spirits, you know, demonic spirits, fallen angels, were coming to cause men to do great evil. Genetic engineering, cloning of new human beings, combining men with animals, chimera, all these bizarre and insanely evil practices were going on at that time, according to studies from archaeologists. And God destroyed the world because of it, just as we see the chimera being developed today. Man, they're doing it, and there's information that you can find. There's a guy named Dante Fortson. Look him up on YouTube.
I had him on the show. It had to have been a few years ago now. But I know who you're talking about.
Wow, I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
Nobody else has ever discovered him.
Oh, he's a very interesting guy. I forgot how I got in touch with him, but somehow our paths crossed, and I says, you know what, come on the show and tell me about your story. And he's just a fascinating guy.
Yeah, he talks about the chimera and what they're doing today, how they're crossing animals with human beings. It's just disgusting, revolting, and so evil that it makes you want to cry out to God to bring these people to justice. So all those things were being done, and God is certainly going to bring these people to justice with the destruction of the world. This is what he talks about throughout the Bible. That's why I refer to the Bible so much, because it's evil coming to a climax where the earth, God just destroys everything. And we've read about it with the great flood of Noah's day. But anyway, so 9,000 BC, the sinking of Atlantis. 5,300 BC, that's 36 and a half centuries later, was the great flood of Noah's day, according to the geologists Pittman and Ryan, who studied the Black Sea. They found 5,300 BC was that great flood. Then we go to advance ourselves another 36 and a half centuries to around 1650 BC, when the great plagues of Egypt occurred, with the turning of the waters to red, and the inundation of the frogs and the inundation of lice that covered the earth, and then the inundation of
Don't you hate that?
locusts, the locust inundation where they devoured everything. Every leaf was devoured by this great cloud of locusts. And also great disease, plague came upon all the animals, all in the book of Exodus. The animals died from these diseases. This is tomorrow's news today that occurred yesteryear. So we can look forward to all of these events occurring. That was 1650 BC. So again, we have these time markers, these indices in time, each catastrophic global event occurring 36 and a half centuries apart from one another. So it's become nailed down mathematically or arithmetically nailed down that, yes, we're due for another 36 and a half centuries that passed, and we're due for the next incursion of this brown dwarf star. Why is it every 36 and a half centuries? Why is it so periodically, chronologically punctual?
Maybe that's how much time we get to get it right.
Well, you know, that coincides. Yeah, man's evil is also sort of chronologically predictable. But on a cosmic scale, a comet, by definition, is periodic. For example, Halley's Comet comes into our solar system every 75 years, like clockwork. Well, this is a long-period comet, and it's very large. It's, again, conservatively estimated to be around 1,000 or more Earth masses. And it travels between two suns, our sun and a distant dead sun many billions of miles away. Now, how many people have heard about this? Only astronomers know about this dead sun that exists, and it's a part of our solar system. If you talk to a veteran astronomer, they will tell you that, yeah, they believe that there is a dead sun, and they will tell you also that practically all the solar systems that they have been able to sight somehow have two suns, or what they call binary, bi meaning two, so that our solar system is quite normal in having two suns.
And that makes sense, because binary star systems is the common, right? And so why would we be any different? And you think about these other planets that are in our solar system, and I believe that there was once some kind of life on Mars, and probably still is, and maybe that other sun was helping them out, or one of these other planets.
Well, yeah, this dead sun, if it were alive, obviously we would all know about it.
Sure.
If it were burning bright. But it's dead, but it still constitutes a very, very great mass. I mean, look at our sun. Our sun, if you look it up on Wikipedia or in any astrophysical journal, you'll find our sun is estimated to be one-third of a million Earth masses. That's incredible. One-third of a million Earth masses, about. So planet X, this dwarf star, baby star, being only 1,000 Earth masses, what's 1,000 Earth masses compared to one-third of a million Earth masses? Well, that's kind of tiny. So it's like a big tennis player would be like our sun, right? And another big tennis player on the far court would be like our solar system's distant dead sun. And that smaller object, that 1,000 Earth mass object, planet X, would be like the tennis ball. So now that tennis ball has been batted back and forth from our sun, the tennis player on the near court, and the distant sun, the tennis player on the far court. But instead of batting it back and forth with a tennis racket, it's gravity that does it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still there, Mike?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here. Oh, okay. I'm listening to you. I'm very interested.
Yeah, it whips around, and we've all seen this phenomenon. We've also heard NASA talk about it whenever they have space mission, the mission to Mars, the mission to the moon, when the capsule was supposed to slingshot around the moon in order to cast itself back toward Earth. Well, it's a slingshot phenomenon that causes this brown dwarf star to go back and forth between the two, just like a pendulum. It's a cosmic celestial pendulum. And we know that the period of a pendulum, you know, grandfather's clock, if anybody remembers seeing an old grandfather's clock, the big tall clock with a swinging pendulum, you know that the period, the time it takes for that pendulum to swing from one extreme to the other is very predictable, a certain number of seconds down to a precise fraction of a second. Well, likewise, the time that takes for the celestial pendulum to go from one extreme to the other is also chronologically predictable, based upon the mass of the objects, so the distance, and the mass of the suns, the two suns. So that's why it's periodic. It goes around, is drawn toward the sun, the distant sun, for example, but it doesn't hit the sun. There's a repulsion force that is described in science that prevents the two objects from striking one another. So it's being pulled toward the sun, but then it overshoots the sun, and that dead sun, and then the sun, once it overshoots it, what's happening? The dead sun is pulling it back by its own by gravitational force. It's pulling it back. So now the object makes a big, big U-turn, and you know when you make a U-turn, you've got to really slow down.
Right.
That's what's happening to that sun in my example here, I mean that dwarf star in my example here, when it makes its U-turn around that distant dead sun and begins to make its way back. It's now being slingshotted in a looping fashion, just like David and Goliath, David's sling, where you take this big stone in a big pouch connected to a long string or rope, and you swing it around and you produce this centrifugal force and you release it, and then it goes off tangentially with great velocity, great kinetic energy.
Would this dead sun, would this be what they tell us that they think that there's another object out beyond Pluto, and that's what's tugging on some of the planets out that way? Would this be that dead sun?
No, that's Planet X. And that was Planet X itself as it was approaching our solar system. That was back in 1983. And in fact, as long ago as 200 years ago, around the early 1800s, they noticed that the outer planets, which had newly been discovered, Uranus and Neptune, were actually being pulled, plucked out of their orbits momentarily, sort of like a jogger jogging around a track. Every time he hits a certain hole in the road, a pothole, he stumbles, falters momentarily. That's what these planets were doing, Uranus and Neptune. They were faltering in their orbit, being plucked out by the gravitational pull. They couldn't see this object that was pulling them out, but they saw the gravitational effects of it. They knew it must be a very, very massive object to exert that kind of a tugging force on the outer planets. Well, that was 200 years ago. Now the object has gotten much closer. It's in our solar system now. We see great evidence for it with the discharging of the heliosphere, the great excitation of the sun that occurred over the last decade as a result of the discharging of the heliosphere. Why would the heliosphere discharge when this great object penetrated this bubble, this plasma, electrified plasma bubble known as the heliosphere surrounding our solar system? Well, it would discharge because this object is now pulling a trail of plasma, thus creating a path, a low resistance path, just as in electricity. When you have a bug zapper, you have a high voltage electrodes, high voltage potential on one electrode inside the bug zapper, and then the other grid, electrified grid, is the opposite potential, electrical potential. And in between it, there's no discharging electricity between the highly positive electrified grid and the highly negative electrified grid. There is no discharge at all because you have the resistance of the air in between it, preventing electricity from discharging from one grid to another. But when the bug flies into it, the bug reduces the resistance between the air resistance between the positive grid and the negative grid. And when that resistance is diminished, it allows the discharging to occur, just like you would put a hole in a dike, and automatically and instantly water would spurt out of that hole, because now the resistance, the holdback resistance of the dike or the dam has been penetrated, and a piercing a water stream is allowed to come through. Similarly, discharging electricity occurs through the bug itself, kills the bug. That's exactly what happens when this bug-like object comes into our solar system. The heliosphere is highly positive in electrical charge because of the plasma surrounding, plasma sphere that constitutes the heliosphere. And the opposite electrical potential is in the sun, which is largely negative. So between this negative sun and the outlying distant heliosphere sphere, which is positive, you have a great electrical potential. And now this object flies in, creates a great discharging. Now that all that plasma begins to discharge back through the solar system into the center of the solar system, sometimes penetrating and affecting the planets within the solar system and back to the sun. That's how electricity wants to go. It wants to go from positive to negative, one potential to the other, one polarity to the other. That's why we now have a discharging of the heliosphere. So we know that this object is in the solar system now by that decade-long discharging of the heliosphere that we have experienced.
How long are they going to be able to keep the masses in the dark about this? I mean, at what point does it come where everybody's going to know and have no doubt about it?
Well, you know, it's a ramping up. It's sort of like a turning on a dimmer light. You begin to slowly increase the lever, dimmer control, and the light becomes gradually brighter. And then you reach a point where it's gradually increases so much that the light becomes almost blinding in intensity. That's what happens with public awareness. So many millions have experienced great meteorological disasters in the last decade or so. People have been flooded out. People have lost their homes. Hurricane Sandy. People have had their homes turned to a pile of debris from a beautiful home with great possessions and all wonderful facilities to nothing but a pile of garbage. Those people will never forget. It'll always, that horror will always stay with them. And they'll know that something is happening to the earth. And the more of us, as these events, these disastrous events occur, tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, hailstorms, giant hailstones the size of softballs, which is happening now, and it's been happening more increasingly frequently in the Weather Channel reports, pounding and smashing cars, totaling cars, phenomenon such as straight line windstorms that are unheard of in recent decades, in past decades. They're called derechos, derecho, D-E-R-E-C-H-O, where you have a tremendous high velocity straight line wind that is so large in the area that it covers several United States states. It covers, we had one not too long ago that covered the states of Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, and it swept eastward, and fortunately it died out. Well, unfortunately for the people who got hit by it, but it did die out as it reached the East Coast. We're seeing more and more derechos. We're seeing more and more epic floods, floods which are exceeding all recorded records. Record-breaking floods, record-breaking heat waves. And so you ask, when will people know? It's just overwhelming us now. People are beginning to wake up to it now, and the government is being forced to create more and more ludicrous lies to cover up the truth, because they don't want to lose control. In a way, I can understand it, because if they were to tell the people what's really happening, like we're doing now, many people would go into a panic, but many people would say, like James McCanney and Mark Hazelwood would say, no, many of us would just, you know, brace ourselves and realize that we have a job to do. We'd have to start preparing. And Mark Hazelwood had said years ago, before he stopped reporting on this subject, he said, by not telling the people, you're causing them more greater disaster, and you would save their, they would save their lives if you would be, treat them like adults and tell them what's about to happen. So they would, at first they would grieve a bit, but then they would begin to change their ways, change their lifestyle, and begin to prepare.
Well, here's the thing. If they had told us about this back in 83, people could have been preparing for it. I mean, if you tell someone, hey, within 20 years, this is going to happen, they're going to be more likely not to panic, and they're going to take steps towards it. But when you tell them, like, 3 weeks before it comes, well, that's another ball game. Then there probably will be a lot of panic.
Well, that's a good point. You know, I mean, they should. You're right. They should have told us many decades ago. If they were responsible, altruistic, sincere leaders, but they're not. They're a bunch of criminals, as we know, murdering, mass murdering criminals. So they are not going to tell us the truth. It's up to us to find out the truth. Here's an example. There was a recent YouTube that was sent to me, and I think I sent it to you. I hope I can remember to do that. We have to get this YouTube out. So it's in regard to this massive solar blast that just missed us. And in the reports, even Alex Jones was alarmed. The reports state that if this thing had hit us, we could have had all the power, most of the power grids on Earth knocked out. We were lucky it missed us. But that's been accompanied by a large black area over the sun. Looks like a big chunk of the bright sun has been blacked out. It's just incredible, and this is frightening.
Yeah, and is it just me? Maybe I don't get out enough, but does the sun seem brighter? I mean, when I go outside, I almost can't go out without wearing sunglasses. It's just so damn bright,
and it's hot. You're right, absolutely. I mean, I remember when I was a child, the sun was never this hot. You can't stand out there for more, as you say, without a hat and without a shirt. For more than a few minutes, it just burns you. You feel like you're burning to death.
Oh yeah, if I'm in the car and the sun's shining in and I'm at a light, I mean, it feels like my legs are on fire.
You're right. I mean, it is quite intense, and that's something that they cannot hide. When you look at the sun, how could the elite lie to us or deceive us into thinking that this is normal?
Well, because they think that they're going to survive it and get rid of us, but what they don't know is in the end, they're going to be probably buried in their underground bunkers, because I think when this earth gets shooken, I don't know, under the ground might be the last place I'd want to be.
I agree. I would not want to be under there either. They've been trying to, from what I understand, from somebody who's, I guess this guy, he didn't tell me where he works, but he works for, in a capacity that deals with, corporations that are studying these earth changes and for the sake of profit, I guess, searching for methane gas, and they're dragging these, sonar detection devices. I didn't get the whole story. But they're by ships, they're dragging these devices along the seabeds looking for bulges that indicate methane deposits that are coming up. And, of course, they want to tap into these methane deposits for natural gas. The profit incentive is very great. And he's in his workings, his dealings with these kinds of people. He was telling me a number of things. I still have his number. I should call him and get some more information. But he was telling me of underground facilities, the earthquakes that are occurring, some of them shallow. These earthquakes have been deliberately provoked by HAARP operations in order to test the integrity of the underground cities of the elite. Because the elite are so scared to go under there that they want to get some more scientific verification that cities are going to withstand earthquakes. So that's why they're creating these earthquakes at the same depths, as shallow depths, as the locations of these, their underground facilities, their underground cities. So that's one reason for these shallow earthquakes, from what I've been told. Anyway, it makes sense to me that they would do that. It indicates that the elite are quite scared to go into there. They don't want to go underground. They're just as wise and as prudent as we would be in wanting to avoid underground cities. So why would they do it? Why would they go underground? Well, because if you stay on the surface of the earth, many people will be scorched to death. If you look at the movie Knowing, Knowing,
great movie.
Cage,
yeah,
everybody should get that movie, because in that movie they forewarn us what's about to happen. They say a large solar blast is going to hit. Solar blasts of tremendous intensity are going to strike Earth, causing such a burning, a scorching, that anyone living on the surface will be killed. And this shows a big representation, computer-generated representation of the view of the cities from above as they heat up and a wave of fire sweeps across the cities and they go up in flames. And people are in panic and people are being told by the government, go underground, dig as deep as you can. We cannot help you.
Wow.
So that's what, this is not just a movie. This is a prophetic vision of what someone in the movie industry is trying to warn the people about.
Yeah, I think so.
Forging.
You know, and not to get all, into the cartoonish aspect of this, but even there was a series that was out not too long ago called Smallville, and it was a story about Superman growing up and all that stuff. And in the last episode, he finally became Superman. And, you know, I found it pretty interesting that there was this big red, it looked just like Planet X coming for the Earth. And they ended the series with him going up and pushing this thing away so it didn't kill everybody on the planet. And so they do give us these little signs. I mean, you know, they toy with us.
Yes, right. I mean, I believe that there are people in power, people in the know. Many of them are in the movie industry, and they have to have connections with people in the elite and in the government that are telling us what's about to happen. And they sincerely try to warn us in these movies. There was another movie, 2012. Of course, 2012 came and went, but it showed the destruction of the land masses. I didn't see the movie, but I saw some clips from it, which are very logical as to what gravitational pull of a massive dwarf star would do to Earth's crust, where whole large crustal areas of the Earth are actually lifted up, in some cases pulled downward. And in that movie, they try to warn us too. And someone told me that when they saw the movie, it began with a large red celestial body in the distance coming closer and closer to Earth. Now, they didn't say this is Planet X that's approaching, but they showed us visually what this object looks like, a red, hazy, haze-surrounded object approaching Earth. So there you go. In many books, in many stories, I should say, movies, they are hinting at the approach of this large object and trying to warn the population. I should give you a little bit, right? You know, we've been talking about stuff that some skeptics might try to challenge. So let's look at the New York Times article that actually shows us the evidence. And this is a long article, but maybe I should take a little time to get through it, because it paints a picture of what they discovered virtually, well, just a little bit over 30 years ago.
Okay, go ahead with that. And we've got about 8 minutes. So go ahead and do that. And I want you to be able to give out any information that you would like so people could find you. But go ahead. It's floor's
yours. This article is a landmark article, and it's going to prove to you all the stuff that skeptics might be able to challenge in everything we've said. New York Times, Sunday, January 30th, 1983. I photocopied the exact article, and it's on the internet. I think I sent it to Michael, but I can send it to him again so that people can't say, oh, this is just a transcript that somebody made up. No, this is the actual photocopy of the New York Times page, Sunday, Sunday, January 30th, 1983, New York Times. Title, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought Planet X. Evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for this 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations with a 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations, that is, gravitational variations in their trajectories, will provide clues to the source of this mysterious pulling force. And they are hoping that a satellite-borne telescope launched last week will detect heat signatures from the planet or whatever it is out there. The Infrared Astronomical Satellite, IRAS, was boosted into a 560-mile-high polar orbit Tuesday night from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. It represents an $80 million venture by the United States, Britain, and the Netherlands. In the next 6 or 7 months, the telescope is expected to conduct a wide-ranging survey of nearly all the sky, detecting sources not of ordinary light, but of infrared radiation, which is invisible to the human eye and largely absorbed by the atmosphere. Scientists thus hope that the new telescope will chart thousands of infrared-emitting objects that have gone undetected, stars, interstellar clouds, asteroids, and with any luck, the object that pulls at Uranus and Neptune. The last time a serious search of the skies was made, it led to the discovery in 1930 of Pluto, the 9th planet. But the story begins more than a century before that, after the discovery of Uranus in 1781 by the English astronomer and musician William Herschel. Until then, the planetary system seemed to end with Saturn. As astronomers observed Uranus, noting irregularities in its orbital path, many speculated that they were witnessing the gravitational pull of an unknown planet. So began the first planetary search based on astronomers' predictions, which ended in the 1840s with the discovery of Neptune, almost simultaneously by English, French, and German astronomers. But Neptune was not massive enough to account entirely for the orbital behavior of Uranus. Indeed, Neptune itself seemed to be affected by a still more remote planet. In the late 19th century, two American astronomers, William Pickering and Percival Lowell, predicted the size and approximate location of this trans-Neptunian body, which Percival Lowell called Planet X. So you see, it's had that name Planet X for over 100 years. I'll skip ahead a few paragraphs.
Okay.
Recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory have confirmed the orbital perturbation that is plucking irregularity, the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune. So in other words, this recent calculations by the U.S. Naval Observatory have confirmed that indeed we have perturbations or plucking of the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune, in which Dr. Thomas C. Van Flandern, Incidentally, he recently passed away, and I wonder if it was a normal death. Dr. Yeah. Thomas C. Van Flandern, an astronomer at the observatory, says could be explained by, quote, a single undiscovered planet, unquote. He and his colleague, Dr. Robert Harrington, incidentally, who many believe was murdered because he was trying to blow the whistle on this thing, he and a colleague, Dr. Robert Harrington, calculate that the 10th planet should be 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth. Incidentally, 2 to 5, these guys know better. These guys are famous astronomers. They know that this object has got to be much more greater than 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth. As I said before, a brown dwarf star is at least 1,000 times more massive than Earth. So why would they downplay it so much? They were probably told not to cause panic. And that's probably why they deliberately lied here in this article in saying that it's only 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth and has a highly elliptical orbit that takes it some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto. Hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of the sun. That's a very telling statement.
That is
hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of the sun. What that means is this object is being pulled in by the sun. It has entered the outer fringes of Earth's gravitational force field and has been captured, even though captured very gently at that point back in 1983, but yet still captured and being gradually inexorably drawn in toward the sun at the center of our solar system. And it's made progress in its travel, its incursion into our solar system. I believe, and others believe, that it's out there somewhere in the outer planets near Saturn.
No.
Because what's happening is we see storms now on Saturn that are incredible, unprecedented, and a new weird, very weird hexagonal pattern has developed over the North Pole of Saturn. Mike Adams had reported on that. We should check that out.
Yeah.
It was a NASA report.
And the Weather Channel has been covering this stuff too. They've been talking about it.
Oh, I must have missed that. They talked about the hexagonal pattern on.
Well, no, they talked about the storms on Saturn and on Jupiter, and they talked about this celestial object coming around. It was one of those "what would happen, what if."
Oh, I videotaped those. I actually DVD recorded them, and they're on my YouTube channel. I've got to. One of them is called Forecasting the End. They talk about a rogue planet that could come in, and they always make it like possible but not definite. They don't want to say it's definitely out there. But they just about told us plainly that this rogue planet, if it ever came in here, it would cause great devastation to Earth, even though it doesn't touch Earth, because of the gravitational pull on Jupiter. It pulls Jupiter out. Jupiter is the shepherd, more or less, of those inner planets, which are the sheep of the solar system. We're the sheep. Venus,
we're just
Mercury.
About out of time, John. I hate to cut you off. I can go on another 3 hours with you. I could. We'll get you back soon and continue this conversation. I promise you that. Where would you like people to go check you out? And I want to thank you so much for being a guest tonight.
Well, I thank you so much for inviting me, Michael. I have my interviews and my Planet X radio drama are on the audio page. If you go to thelightofdayradioshow.com, I'm sorry, it's such a long name, thelightofdayradioshow.com, click on the big Planet X logo. Give it some time to load because it's a very large audio page. That'll take you to the Planet X page.
Okay, well, John, thank you so much, and I'm going to get your link up on my website within the next 24 hours. Thank you very much, and keep spreading the word, my friend, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks again, Michael.
All right, everybody, that's John DiNardo, and easy to find. You can Google him or whatever search engine you use. You'll find them. We're going to get them up on the website as well. I want to thank each and every one of you, wherever it is you may be, around the globe in the chat room or on the phone lines or however you're listening. Thank you. And we'll be back tomorrow night here for another episode of Late Night in the Midlands. Keep your eyes posted to the sky. Keep your ears posted to this broadcast. Good night, everybody.